Ladies and gentlemen, as well as kids of all ages, welcome to RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we chat with Hannah Lipsky of Chaotic Shiny Productions, and we talk about alternatives to your metal miniatures. Again, welcome to Season 2, Episode 5 of RPG Circus. My name is Jeff, and joining me is Mark. Unfortunately, Zach is unable to join us due to technical issues, so I'm sorry to say that he will not be joining us. We will miss him.
Mm-hmm.
So, welcome, and hopefully this will be a very interesting podcast for all of you out there. Why don't we just get to it and get started with the news? What do you think?
Sounds good.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, folks, and let us dazzle you with some RPG news. Well, it's a very, very interesting news segment. It's been roughly about a month since we recorded last. I'm sorry. We've just had a variety of personal issues that have cropped up. So, unfortunately, that's just kind of the way things go. But good news is that... I've added a new way to chat with us. The guys that created the chat channel for the role play media network over on the sorcery.net IRC server got me to thinking that, well, it's pretty free, it's available, let's do it. So actually, if you actually go to the rpgcircus.com website and /chat, it will actually call up a web-based IRC client. I kid you not, and it works pretty well. If you don't want to do that, but you actually want to use a real IRC channel, chat client, the connection information is also contained on that page. So check it out sometime. I hang out during my work day with it up and running, so you'll probably see me online. Second up, Paizo's RPG Superstars is actually in the final stages. I think they're voting on the four adventure proposals now, and hopefully we'll have a winner from that, and that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have to say that I keep thinking about trying to submit, and I realized I would never get past stage one.
I know, me either.
And it's just,
I can't
and you
see
know
what, myself.
And you know what it is? I suck at magic items. I can't create a special wondrous item to save my life, first off, and then to even go in there and start statting out a monster. Although I have to say, in defense of statting out a monster, the Paizer rulebook for Pathfinder actually has pretty good guidelines for how to stat monsters.
So that's good.
Well, that was one of their big things, is that they actually go in there and talk about, you know, if you want to create a monster, here's some guidelines to doing that. So that's which is so much more helpful than you're on your own.
Yeah.
So the other piece of news is that this is a little old, but apparently WotC made a request to ask, you know, the community, how can they make their D&D 4th edition adventures better? I thought that was a good idea. I mean, I think everyone should go forth and actually say, how can I make my adventures better? What can I do? What are we doing wrong? What are we doing right? So I think that's I think that's a good step forward. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, don't think very highly of 4th edition, and then some people don't think highly of the adventures, so... Adventures are always kind of that weird area anyway. There's, I don't know how to describe it. At one point, you couldn't release a game without making adventures. And then over time, you know, especially with the way, you know, TSR was back in the day, they decided that they shouldn't be focusing on adventures anymore because they don't make any money at it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of weird because we're kind of coming back to where, if you're a third party, you can actually make money doing adventures because the main company doesn't want to do that. Or people are realizing that if you don't have at least an example of what gaming should be like, how are you going to attract new players that have never played before? So
yeah,
it's kind
and
of.
I think they've done a really good job with their adventure series, where they basically released three adventures per tier of play for 4th edition. So it was, I think, a 9 adventure total that took you all the way up to eventually fighting Orcus, the the God of the Undead and everything. So I thought it worked really well. I played the first two of them, the Keep on the Shadowfell and Thunderspire Labyrinth, and really enjoyed them. So I'm looking forward to seeing what advice they get on how to improve it.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. They although they did put a proviso not to say just you sucker.
Yeah.
I would say people can say that, you just ignore them. So
exactly, yeah.
Well, I guess the weird one is, I guess the Boston Herald had an article where they blamed D&D for murder, was kind of the gist of the article. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, I don't know how to describe it. That was just kind of stupid on my part. But they kind of gloss. It kind of just remind it. I don't know how many of our listeners are old dogs like myself. I consider myself an old dog. I've been gaming now since, well, quite frankly, since I was about 10. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in the 80s. I grew up during what I call the witch hunt period of gaming. And so yeah. this just smacks of that. You know, this coupled with all the weird decisions that we've had recently about, just a variety of things. So it's, just the weird, how do I describe it? All the penal issues that have come up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Whatever.
And there's so many other things in the world that you can blame murder on instead of, blaming the person for having done it themselves. There's so many other scapegoats. I don't see why you'd focus on D&D when now it's kind of an old subject to blame D&D. Like, go ahead and blame video games or blame violent movies or anything else that you want to blame it on, but
it's like, the video game, honestly. It's the video game.
Yeah.
It's always something. But yeah. That was disheartening, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. More interesting news, though, is the this P20 Modern project, which I think mm-hmm. is pretty, which is kind of a cool idea. Basically, they want to take the Pathfinder rules and basically do the D20 Modern version of it.
Yeah.
And I think they're trying to raise money, I believe, to do that. They're using the same Kickstarter website for money raising that the cookbook was going to use. I'm still ashamed to say that she wasn't able to raise enough money to actually get that kickstarted mm-hmm. that way. I know she's still doing some of it at least, so hopefully we'll hear good things out of that. But I'm actually kind of excited. That's I'm not much of a big D20 Modern fan, so it'll be interesting to mm-hmm. see what they do. I remember when I was looking at running a spy game, I was like, well, am I going to do Spycraft or D20 Modern? I looked at the D20 Modern classes and was totally unimpressed and said, I have to do Spycraft.
Yeah.
So.
And it looks like so far they've got 16 backers who have pledged $250 or more. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it pretty is. So, if you want to get in on that, I suggest you lay down at least a five spot or something. I think that would be mm-hmm. kind of nifty for them. Speaking of Spycraft, of course, just recently we got the new announcement that Spycraft 3rd Edition due out spring next year. That is 2011. Yeah. Sometimes when I say 2011, I can't believe that we're saying 2011.
I know. Where's my flying car?
No. I don't want the flying car. I want my personal jetpack.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's good news. It will be very interesting mm-hmm. to see what they change and what they keep.
Because they did a good job of sort of advancing the rules from Spycraft 1.0 to 2.0. So I'm looking forward to seeing the further progression from there.
Yeah, and of course, we've had them on before, and they've talked mm-hmm. about, where Spycraft came from and why it technically isn't a D20 product.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Speaking of other news, Microlite 20 is now under new ownership.
Yeah.
That was, I know that's kind of exciting. I'm not sure if the guy's name is Seth Drabitko?
Drabitko, I believe.
Yeah, thank you. For all of you listening out there, yes, I am horrible at last names, and I apologize profusely. That's just the way I roll. I can't even say my own last name correctly. So, but that's good news. I'm glad. I know I know Grey Wolf was not really interested in continuing on doing anything with the MicroLite 20 rules. He wanted to at least have it passed over to, into some sort of good hands. So, and at least in the at least the biggest fear was that, you know, MicroLite 20 might become some sort of weird, you know, pay product that somebody has to pay to license. And Seth basically said, no, that's not the case. There will always be an OGL version out there for that. So I take that as really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I've always thought, this has just always been my personal opinion, is that I always thought it would be very interesting to have a module that you make for like 3.5 with like the MicroLite 20 rules in them. You know, because it's a page. So you actually have, you know, so you could actually take a module and at least do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people complain, well, then you're not really, some people might complain that you're not really supporting the main product. And I'm like, well, you know, you do what you need to do. So we'll leave it at that. Speaking of products, Goodman Games Dungeon Alphabet sold out. They have none in the warehouse.
Yeah.
So apparently they're going to have a second printing, and that will be due out in May.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very, very good. I mean, we've, you know, which is good for them. We've had, we've personally, I know, said quite a few disparaging things about, you know, Goodman Games. And I, just to counter that, I'd like to say there's something positive coming out of it. They've actually released a good product, and it sold out.
Yeah.
Speaking of oddities, there's been quite a little talk about Career Builder's suggestion about interviews. And again, the strangest things or outrageous things said during interviews. And the one was using D&D as a method to show that you know about team building or interacting as a team. And there's a lot of people say, well, you could do much worse. And it's like, I understand your point. I'm a gamer. I get it. The truth is, most people that interview you are not gamers.
Yeah, they don't want to hear about it.
That's, you know, that's like to them, like you're talking, you know, first off, they don't know what's D&D. They're going to think that you're thinking about teamwork and essence of some sort of something like World of Warcraft, playing a video game.
Yeah.
And that's not what they're looking for, people. Sorry. Yes, theoretically, does tabletop gaming teach teamwork? Absolutely. So unless you know your audience, I wouldn't bring it up. But that's just me.
Yeah.
One last thing, this is kind of a weird downer, is Catalyst Game Labs. Did you catch this one? One of the owners owes the company money due to bad accounting practices.
Yeah, he apparently swindled them out of a bunch of money, and they're now trying to track him down or something.
Well, he admits that he did something wrong, and he's working on paying it back. That's what the gist of the article is. What I get from this is that they never, I'm guessing they didn't set up the company properly as a corporation at some point.
Yeah, they should have been able to catch that earlier.
Right. That base, you know, which leads me to believe that they have a partnership form of corporation, I mean company, which my business instructors always said either be a sole proprietor or a corporation, stay out of partnerships. That was always their recommendation. Yeah. Because when you have partners like that, you're liable for their bad doings.
Yeah.
So luckily they caught it and they're doing something about it. And I guess the reason they were doing it all is because I guess they've had some issues paying some of their freelancers and artists.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I take heart in the fact that they decided to do that. They were upfront with it. And they're telling their artists and freelancers is, we will get you the money. Unlike some other people that were just like, you know, forget the artist, forget the freelancers. They did the work, and we'll pay them sometime in the next 2,000 years.
Yeah.
So, and with that, I think that pretty much closes the news. The only other thing that I have, that's right. You said you had a surprise for us. I have one little
surprise. Yeah. What would you say is the game that has received the most flack from this podcast?
The most flack?
Yeah. As in the most criticism among the hosts. I'll give you a hint.
Rollmaster Champions?
No, it's referred to as a board game pretty frequently on here.
Oh, you're talking about the third edition of Warhammer?
Yes, and my brother, who just got a job at Fantasy Flight Games, sent me for my birthday the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game. And I have not opened it yet. So I'm actually going to do that right now on the air and just give you a couple of just a minute or so of
first impressions.
Yeah. The box is really nice, high quality.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, they produce top quality work.
Oh yeah. And let's see, they got four books here right on the top that are all paperback and really nice quality. The Tome of Adventure, the Rule Book, Tome of Mysteries, and Blessings. And then it looks like they just got tons of counters and cards in there too, like we suspected. But it looks really good, and I'll be definitely keeping you guys up to date on my research into this game.
Well, you'll definitely tell us how it plays.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. I'm a little worried because they call it a role-playing game, but I understand they're playing to what they're good at.
Yeah.
I played many hours of Arkham Horror.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that is a very, if somewhat complicated game to get going, but once you get going into it, it's actually easy to play.
Oh, yeah.
But it is, it takes a while, and it is a hard game.
Yeah.
It is very much a hard game.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, so that's excellent. That's good news. I'll be more than happy to listen to how that plays out, because I love first-hand accounts. The other thing that I had up is just that we've gotten a lot of flack lately about our bumpers and stuff. So those of you out there, if you have suggestions, please send it to us. If you have samples of what you think we should be doing, send it to us. Because, hey, I'm not perfect. Mark's not perfect. The last time I checked. Are you perfect, Mark?
Yeah. Not quite. I'm working on it.
Yeah. And when he's here, he's not perfect either. Although, you know, I'm sure we'd all like to think we're perfect. So, yes, if you have good suggestions or even examples, I'd love examples personally. And if it's a good example, hell, I'll use it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind. That's with, of course, whoever sends it in their permission to do so. I'd be more than happy to see what they give us. And if I think it passes mustard, if we decide it passes mustard, we'll use it. So
absolutely.
And I think that pretty much ends the news. There was lot of news, but then we haven't been here for a while. So let's get it finished. All right, folks. That's it for the sideshow. It's time for everyone to go inside the big top, for it's time for the main attraction. Yeah, main attraction. Only two topics this week, but that's okay. First up, we have our conversation with Hannah Lipsky, the founder of Chaotic Shiny Productions. And Mark, why don't you give us some more introduction?
Absolutely. How's it going, Hannah?
It's going pretty well. How about you?
Pretty good. What exactly, what's your involvement in the role-playing game community? Just to give everybody a sort of heads up.
Well, that's a lot of things, actually. I run Chaotic Shiny Productions, which is a small press publisher. I also run Chaotic Shiny, which is a site with a lot of different generators, kind of like really complicated automated Mad Libs, and most of them are geared towards gamers. I'm also one of the editors for the role-playing tips Ezine. And I comment on a lot of blogs. I suppose that's about it.
Very good.
You comment on a lot of blogs. Don't we
I
all?
Know that I usually get pretty much any post that I put up, Hannah ends up commenting on. So, and that's actually where I first met you through was all the comments you were leaving on the blog. So, I've always appreciated that. What all is on your Chaotic Shiny website? You said there's generators, but what type of generators are there?
Well, there's over 70 of them at last count, and there's some for people that you can generate characters from modern games, fantasy games, fully statted out 4th edition player characters, which was a lot of fun to update when the Player's Handbook 2 came out. There's also sort of less specific general ones. There's some silly ones like the Good Idea Generator, which comes up with things like save the kingdom by going shirtless and balancing on the rolling barrel. And the funny thing about those is usually you're like, you know, I think one of my players did that once.
That's awesome. What's your day job?
Right now, I'm a student. I'm actually applying to a lot of jobs. So, hey, if anyone out there is hiring software developers.
Very nice.
Really, as a software developer myself, in case anyone didn't know that already from listening to the podcast, I think I've mentioned it several times. What kind of stuff do you, programming language, do you normally use?
When I'm doing stuff for myself, it's either in VB.NET or in Perl, but in our classes, they like to make us use Java because no one can read my Perl.
No one can read your Perl. Oh, you'd win one of the, God, I can't even pronounce the word.
Obfuscated Perl contest?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not quite that ridiculous, but I do enjoy regexes, so I'm getting there.
Yeah, I don't do much Perl anymore. That's something I did a long, long time ago. So my Perl skills are nowadays pretty poor.
I only really know basic. So. So you design all of the generators yourself?
Yep, I get a lot of really good suggestions, but all of the coding is on.
Okay.
Well,
how long have you been playing role-playing games?
Since the summer before I started high school, so I guess that would be about 8 years now.
Okay. And what kind of games have you played in the past?
Well, I first got into D&D with what I believe was first edition D&D, but a lot of the things that I thought were rules have later turned out to be probably house rules, so I'm not actually sure what we were playing, but it involved a lot of dice, and my mage got knocked out every fight.
Well, nice. You know what? I call that D&D. I don't... You know, here's the thing, and this is an aside. It doesn't matter what edition you play. As long as you're having fun and you like what you're playing.
Exactly.
That's the end of the story. So, yeah, you were playing D&D. You were playing a role-playing game. Anything else besides D&D?
Yeah, I did a lot of Tristat for a while, Tristat DX. It was produced by Guardians of Order, which is now gone. And I think White Wolf actually owns it now. I'm not sure what's going on with that.
I believe
and
so.
And then free games like Wushu and Midgard, I'm a big fan of.
Mm. Okay. So mostly fantasy then for you? Are you a lot modern?
Yeah, I've done... Some modern, some sci-fi, but mostly fantasy, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's just a personal favorite of RPGers everywhere. I don't know if it's just the magic angle or what on that. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with modern games, you either have to spend a lot of time thinking about how magic would change society, or a lot of time trying to figure out why it's fun to play a character with magic when you have to hide it from everyone all the time. So.
Yeah.
Well, that, and you know, I think it's just... A lot of people in modern times, I think there's this want to be disassociated with what we're currently involved in. So
yeah. Well, did you hop on the fourth edition bandwagon right off the bat?
Not right away, actually. When I first read, I wasn't even going to buy the rule books, actually. And then John sent them to me. And when I first read them, I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And then I read them a second time, and I was like, you know, actually, a lot of these are pretty good ideas. And now I've been running a fourth edition game for about a year. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. What world are you using? Are you using a homebrew world?
Yeah, it's a homebrew post-apocalyptic, actually. The setting that I call Candle, because the campaign's based around the idea it's better to light a single candle than curse the darkness. So it's a very dark game.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Wow, a post-Holocaustic fantasy? I mean, how does that exactly work? I'm just kind of curious.
With the system?
No, I mean, in terms of, like, setting-wise, I mean, how does that play out?
Well, the it's location-based. The players are all from this one small village. They don't know about any other civilization. And everything else is basically a blasted wasteland. So it's kind of like a really extreme version of Points of Light.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Very cool.
Do you have any technological influences that come into play? Or is that not really an issue? Is it more a post-op?
Yeah, there's some technology. One of the characters has a gun, which I let him take with an exotic weapon proficiency feat. And then there's some non-combat technology, like a portable power generator with the object of one quest. So that does come up, but there's not a whole lot of modern technology around.
So basically, Gamma World without the Gamma.
I suppose. I'm not too familiar with that setting, but I think that one's a little bit more sort of kitchen sinky than what I'm doing.
Right. Yes. No, that's what I mean. You're more of along the lines of, you know, throwback kind of thing. Gamma World, you're right, was a little more kitschy, more 1960s in a way. what, you know, what would happen post-Holocaustic in a 1960s movie, I think, is kind of what I've always imagined Gammaworld is.
Yeah.
Because you have mutated insects that just wouldn't exist because they, you know, the way an insect is structured wouldn't support that kind of thing or something stupid
exactly,
like that.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we do have one running gag where the giant rats are perfectly normal-sized rats because, as far as everyone knows, rats have always been that size.
All right, I like that.
Yeah. What inspired you to start writing PDFs for 4th edition?
Well, part of it was editing the e-zine, the role-playing tips e-zine, and getting used to writing articles and that kind of thing. And then I just had this idea for what if I put together a bunch of cultures that people can put into their worlds, you know, not whole game worlds and not just, you know, settlements or anything, but something that can be adapted to an existing world. And then John and Yax started their gamer lifestyle thing, and it was sort of serendipitous timing. It was, you know, I want to start writing PDFs. These people want to help me start writing PDFs. All right.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, speaking pretty of cool. that, I mean, I know they did that. How do you feel about that program that they had?
It's definitely really helpful. It's kind of hard to follow all of their advice at once. I sort of went crazy trying to do that, and now I just sort of follow most of it or what seems applicable. But even just knowing that they're there, that I can bounce ideas off of them or ask questions, has been really helpful.
Yeah, trust me, I understand. I actually the Pro Bloggers 31 day thing, I could never do completely, so I understand how that goes.
Yeah.
I tried to follow that, and I think I went insane trying to do that for 30 days.
Yeah.
So.
Now, I know that in 3rd edition, there was just an unending stream of products out there, but there really hasn't been that many for 4th edition from third-party publishers. Why do you think that is? Is the license fairly restrictive for 4th edition?
Well, I think that's part of it is that when they first came out with the licensing, they said you can either publish 4th edition or 3.5 products, not both. And so a lot of publishers said, screw that, I'm sticking with 3.5, and just didn't look at it again. And then it was pretty soon afterwards updated to say, okay, you can have 3.5 and 4th. You can even have the same product in both versions, but you can't have both stat blocks in the same product. But at that point, a bunch of publishers had already stopped paying attention, so sort of less were following along, willing to even give it a try.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm just kind of curious. Can you fault the publishers for that?
Certainly not for their initial reaction. I would think that it would behoove them to follow the news a little bit more closely. But I certainly can't blame them for initially just looking at that and saying, forget about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just kind of curious. I mean, do you think that sometimes, I mean, if you were a long-term developer on a particular product line and you had the choice to either continue doing that product line or start making adventures for a different product, newer version of a product line, do you think that in some cases they kind of decided to go ahead and just stick with what they knew?
Absolutely. I think it would certainly depend on just which system I liked better. Maybe they just want to stick with what they know. Maybe they especially don't like 4th edition. There's certainly a lot of reasons to stay with 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that's kind of what I sometimes the feeling that I got is a lot of people, you know, decided to, I mean, especially in Paizo's case, that's exactly what they said. They said, you know what? We know how to write adventures for 3.5. You know, we're going to go ahead and continue doing 3.5. But how do we do this if there's no product out there? So they ended up making their own version of D&D to support their adventure market, basically.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. And so, you know, so the licensing isn't that bad. I mean, how does that exactly work for you?
I pretty much just put the disclaimer, the legal text that they give you in the front of my books, and I try to follow all of their guidelines for what you can and can't use. It's pretty broad. You can use basically the names of everything. I think there's a couple of specific monsters that you're not allowed to use, and that's about it. And they give you all the formatting that everything's supposed to be in.
And the gods you also can't use, correct?
Yeah, you can't use the gods, which is actually totally not a problem for me because I love coming up with gods of my own. I actually have a Pantheon generator. It's one of my more popular free products. So, one bad Ed was working on making sort of like a open source gods for 4th edition at some point. I'm not really sure what happened with that.
Yeah, one bad egg sort of fell through, but I think that they had come up with a pretty complete Pantheon before they folded. So what products have you come out with so far as PDFs go?
For PDFs, there's Marshall Flipper, which is my debut product. It's an overview of 5 different cultures. It's mostly fluff, but there's some peats, some utility powers, some alternate class features for each culture. And then the Marshall Cultures line takes each of those 5 cultures and goes more in-depth with each of them. There's 3 of those out so far. There's the Sajara, which they're kind of a sort of wandering gypsy-like people. There's Aretas, which is like a mix between Rome and a rather obscure Greek town called Goriton. And then Marshall Cultures, the Akanoi, actually just came out yesterday, and it's sort of ice-bound people who really revere their ancestors and have a lot of interesting views on things.
Yeah, I was really excited yesterday when you sent me the email with a link to your newest one, and I actually got to look in the front of the book and see my name in there under playtesters. That was exciting. So I'm published.
That's right.
You know, Mark, I know exactly how you feel. It was kind of weird. I volunteered to try to do some light editing on the first blog anthology, and so I'm listed as an assistant editor, which I think it's kind of funny in a way. I'm not rebuking that. I at least tried to help out, but if anyone's ever seen my spelling.
Generous.
What was that?
It was a bit generous of them to list you as
that. Well, I guess so. Yeah, I think so. And I'm not trying to take anything away from them gracing me with that thing, but it's like if anyone's ever seen my spelling, it's really bad. So sometimes I can't even tell if something's misspelled. But,
yeah,
you know, it's a lot of fun. So
So what products do we have to look forward to in the future?
Well, there's the rest of the Marshall Culture series. There's Arcane Flavor, which I'm about halfway done with. It sort of does the same thing. There's 5 arcane-based cultures. One of the really interesting ones is where evil bards control everyone, which my artist is certainly having a little bit too much fun drawing evil bards. And then I'm also making some non-PDF products. A lot of people had expressed a desire for portable versions of my generators. So I'm making some packs of generators, putting them together, adding in graphical generators, which has been a new and exciting adventure in VB.NET coding for me, and selling those. And so far, my first one, the Kingdom Builders, been very popular. I think the next one's going to be the Treasure Pack.
Very cool.
Well, that's interesting.
Now, are you planning also coming out with Divine Flavor and Primal Flavor books?
Absolutely. It'll be sometime in the future, though. I can't quite match Wizards' release schedule in terms of power sources, but I'm planning on doing a book for each power source eventually.
Now, are you planning on eventually maybe putting all of those different cultures together in one big campaign setting book?
I don't know. The thing I like about the cultures is that they're small. You can take a published campaign world or a homebrew one and drop them in. I don't know if I'd be interested in making a complete setting. It's certainly something to consider, though.
Yeah. Very good. Where can people contact you at?
My main email address is swordgleam@chaoticshiny.com. I'm also online on the RPMN chat that you mentioned earlier. I'm on there a lot as Swordgleam. And I'm on AIM as Demon Illusionist. And you can find all that contact info on my site.
Excellent.
Well, I got one last question. I got one personal question. You know, since you mostly do PDF publishing mostly, but what do you think is small upstart sort of publisher, what do you think your biggest challenge has been?
Just keeping going, really. It's a lot of work for one person, and sometimes I get some great feedback, but you know, sometimes I release something and don't hear anything about it, and no one buys it, and then I'm not quite sure what to do about that. So I think just sticking to it, releasing stuff, sort of fake it till you make it, that kind of thing, keeping going with that.
Mm.
Do you think...
Absolutely.
I mean... Obviously, you chose to do PDFs. Was that, you know, because I know some people had decided to try to do print on demand. Did you ever consider that, or did you decide that was really an expense or an issue that you didn't want to worry about?
I've thought about it. I think if I end up with a large demand for print products, I will do something like that. But until I get a lot of customers asking me for print products, it's a hassle I'd rather not deal with.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I don't have any questions. I just I always find it. I've always had delusions of starting some sort of publishing company, but I've just never done it.
I think that's where most people are at, honestly, and that's what I was at for the longest time. And I still can't quite pinpoint what jolted me out of that. Why don't I just do this?
Well, you know, I think for myself, a lot of it has to do with time. I'm unfortunately a married man. I have children, and the stuff that I do takes a lot of time, and I just don't have the time to do everything that I really want to do. Even though I've had some ideas that I wanted to put out there, like you said, it's hard getting going, and if you never get going, then nothing ever gets done. So I always like to hear about people who are enthusiastic about, you know, getting into the publishing business, doing what they want to do, even if they don't make any money at it. So, alrighty.
Well, Hannah, do you want to stick around for our next topic?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, we always love it when our guests stick around because, well, I think by myself, I'm a pretty boring dude. So next up, we have one of my probably a very interesting topic, especially more recently, is you know, RPGs for the most part are a product of war games. No one can deny that, and miniatures came along with that. So we've all been using metal miniatures for years and years and years and years and years. And, you know, so, you know, one of the things is that more recently, you know, it's been harder to find metal miniatures. I mean, a lot of the old miniature manufacturers kind of gone out of business. I think for most gaming, especially fantasy gaming, people tend to buy the Reaper miniatures.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, they've kind of become the mainstay. But, you know, like Ralph Partha used to make miniatures back in the day. Grenadier is no longer in business. Though, well, most people don't even know. Some people don't even know who they are. And, of course, the sizes have changed. You know, back when I started, they were all 25 millimeter. There was no question. Nowadays, they're 28 millimeter, they're 30 millimeter. But that's the size of the miniature. That's the scale of the miniature, but the map sizes haven't really changed.
I've seen 35 millimeter.
Right. And, you know, what happens is it makes the miniature larger, and you can put more detail on it.
Yeah.
And honestly, my painting skill, not a good option. So, but it's interesting, though. I mean, even in the early days, there was always a desire to have a slightly different, you know, have a cheaper alternative. I mean, the big one that I remember, and I've had a set, but I gave them away to needy gamers in Romania, is Cardboard Heroes, Steve Jackson Games, little Cardboard Heroes. Mm-hmm. Now, at one point, they published everything they had in like one massive book that you could tear apart and cut up. And I actually have like these little plastic counters that you could stick the cardboard figures in, which was great, yeah. You know, because the funny thing is that they don't make those bases anymore. At least let me rephrase that. I don't know if they're discontinued, but they are no longer in stock. None of them. None of the colors are in stock. So you can't order them from Steve Jackson Games anymore, at least not at this point, which is a shame, especially for the rest of this, you know, what has been coming up. So, you know, but they never really, they were out there, but not a lot of players I know liked to use them. They kind of just felt like they were cheap or unusable, or it went against their sensibilities.
Yeah.
So, but what's really impressive, though, is that, you know, so what's really been impressive is the fact that, you know, that's been changing over the years. And I think some of it has to do with the variety of games that we play. I know for myself, one of the biggest problems that we've had is, like, for example, we ran a Traveler game. Well, there's hardly any science fiction figures out there. You can't find science fiction figures, really.
Yeah.
That's changing. You know, Reaper Miniatures has their, you know, their Chronoscape line, which has every oddity that some designer came up with this idea for a miniature, and they've made it, basically. You know, I think they have, you know, Nazis, and they have, you know, my favorite is I have a guy in a diving suit, you know, with a brass helmet. I love that figure. And yeah. You have, they have like a guy, they actually do have a guy with a spacesuit on and a helmet. And they have some superheroes, and they have some other ones, and they have some more modern day ones, if they have some Victorian age. So they have it's a greater variety. But that's just everything that doesn't fit into fantasy, but even that's just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
You know. But I think where things have really started to change was, not that I like them, but the introduction of better plastic miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I don't like the D&D miniature game, that kind of caused a lot of people to start looking at plastic miniatures. Mm-hmm. Because they were relatively cheap. And there are some creatures that you could get in there that honestly, a miniature of that size would have been A, too heavy and too expensive to make.
Yeah.
You know, it's like beholders. Just let's take the classic beholder. You know how hard that is to make in metal?
Yeah.
It is very difficult, where in plastic it was pretty easy. Now, initially, some of the paint jobs on some of these plastic miniatures are really, really bad from what I understand. But they've gotten better. And I actually know some people that buy them and then repaint them. Which kind of, to me, just is like, okay, doesn't that defeat the purpose of getting miniatures that are already painted?
My wife actually just repainted one of the Warforged figures for her character for our campaign.
Right. And then, of course, you know, like, for example, I've always kind of liked the superhero RPGs. You know, I did a lot of hero games, although Champions these days has lost its luster. I think I'm not into doing anything really complex in terms of game mechanics anymore. But I know a lot of people that there was this community of people who would take the HeroClix, you know, the DC HeroClix and the Marvel HeroClix miniatures, you know, and actually mod them for their superhero games.
Yeah.
Because what they do is they would just find all the weird little, the commons or whatever, anything they could find in the bargain bin, and they would use those as their bases to modify.
Yeah.
So that'll
work well.
And that works well for them. And it's like, so plastic minis, you know, are impressive. And it's actually nothing new. I've actually used the little green army men in some of my games. No, I'm serious. I had them marked with little, like, numbers so I knew which one was which, and I would use little green army men for people. And that works well. It's kind of funny, but hey, you know, sometimes you just need representation. And I think it beats using dice.
And with go ahead.
Yeah.
I have quite a lot of plastic zombie dogs from a board game I have that I've just been waiting for the chance to use as minis.
I've got those too, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think plastic, you know, the plastic stuff has come a long way. Mm-hmm. But what
and you can actually, one website that I've been to is Strike Zone Online, which sells individuals of D&D minis and the Star Wars minis and HeroClix. And you can actually get them fairly cheap for a lot of your stuff. A lot of miniatures you can get for like 40 cents or a dollar. So that's one place worth checking out if you don't want to worry about the randomization of the miniatures and you just want to get some.
Right, and
of the holders or something.
And I think that's important because that's what holds a lot of people back. I would never buy them just randomly because it's like, I don't want random miniatures. I want very specific miniatures. Meanwhile, you see some people that just have these plastic miniature collections go like, you spent a lot of money. So, but you know, the interesting thing is that with the advent of a lot of PDF publishing and, you know, selling of PDF products, paper miniatures are starting to make a huge comeback in a way that just wasn't there before. And some of it, I think, is just the artistic ability of the people creating them.
Yeah.
And some of it's just they fill certain fill certain markets. For example, before the podcast, we were talking, and I was talking about one of my favorite little games to play recently, which is a Microlite 20 game called Where No Man Has Gone Before, which is basically a Star Trek game set in the original series. Now, you're not going to find miniatures for the original Star Trek series, not in metal, but there is a guy. It's published on the One Monk forums, where he has the Star Trek guys for Where No Man Has Gone Before. He has like two groups of Federations, some Romulans and some Klingons, I believe.
Memory
serves me right.
Well, the Romulans are going to be coming out soon. He hasn't released those yet, but he has released.
Yes, he has. I have.
He
them.
Did.
Yeah.
Oh, I have. Well, then I'll have to go check that out.
Yeah. If you depending on where you are in the forum, he says he hasn't released them yet. But then you find, I think the main post, actually, he keeps editing that to add in the new links, so he has them out. Now, the only complaint I have, and I mean the one monk miniatures, I think that's what they're, is that right? One monk miniatures.
OneMonk.com is
right,
the website, but they are One Monk Workshop, I believe, is okay. Their
yeah, so name. Yeah, but One Monk actually sells paper, you know, PDFs of paper miniatures, and there's quite a few. And then they have their forums, which actually has some free ones, and actually even One Monk has some free ones. And it's interesting, but I'm not sure I like the way... I understand why they've done it. They've done it for looks. But it really threw me for a loop on how to assemble the miniatures at first. Because when I got paper miniatures, or, you know, back in, like I said, the Steve Jackson game days, is that the miniatures were printed so that, you know, the backs and fronts were printed so that the fold was at the person's head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you'd fold it in half, and you could either make a little triangle base. That was one of the popular ones. Or if you folded it just straight in half, you could stick it in one of those, you know, figure slots. So you'd have, like, this white background with the figure front, and then on the back background, you'd have, you know, you'd have a white background with the back on it.
Mm-hmm.
With the One Monk stuff, the crease is at their feet, and they're assuming that you're gluing them back front to back, and you're going to cut out along the outline. Now, here's the thing. If properly done, they look fantastic that way, by the way. They really do. I just don't know if I have the time or the skill to do that. So
yeah, and I actually took and put together some of their modern zombie figures, and they actually look really, really sharp if you get them put together right.
Yeah, and they actually even have some sort of weird paper bases you can make, I think.
Yeah, they got little paper bases that you're able to assemble and everything, and they're actually quite easy to make. So the way I see it is I could either spend one evening painting one figure, or I could spend one evening making five or six paper figures that are already, you know, in full color and everything.
Right. And especially for, like, the, you know, these small market games or specialist games, you know, let's face it, you're not going to have a whole bunch of Western figures. So if you're running some Wild West game, you're not going to find a whole bunch of Wild West metal miniatures. And I think that's where paper miniatures really take off, is filling these small markets that can't be filled by a major company like Reaper. They just don't have the resources, because there's just not enough interest in all those miniatures to make it worth their while to actually pay someone to make the model.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I don't begrudge them for that. It's just not economically feasible. And, you know, the other advantage, of course, is that if you have the PDFs and they're stored somewhere and you lose a miniature, you print it out again and cut it out, basically.
Yeah.
Or, you know, oh, I need five more dwarves. Okay, let me print out dwarves again. You know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love my metal miniatures, but I think, you know, either getting the plastic ones as an alternative or even the paper ones, I think is a really good idea. And I'm starting to like the paper ones more, because you can actually do things like, you know, if you make a module, you could actually include a sheet of miniatures in your module to use.
Yeah. That'd be phenomenal.
You know, especially if it's, like, for example, let's say you created a new monster for your module. No one's going to have that miniature.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you had a page with miniatures, you know, paper miniatures on it, and some of the miniatures are the monsters you need for the adventure, hey, that's a very cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
great idea.
You know, I mean, and that's where I see these things. You know, it's like, put them where they make sense. You know, could you imagine? I mean, even let's say you have new monster books. I could even see that happening in new monster books. Like say you have, you know, something along those lines. You know, because, you know, most games these days tend to try to use miniatures. I mean, we've said, you know, many people say in the past that, hey, you know, listen, you know, you don't have to use miniatures in a game. That's true, you don't. But I don't know a gamer that doesn't try to use some sort of positional indicators.
You know,
they might not be miniatures. They might be dice. I've used dice. I've used bottle caps. I've used pennies. I've used nickels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I remember when I ran, like I said, I ran a superhero game one time, a Champions game, and the guys had like little generations of their characters. Well, I scanned those images and shrunk them down and stuck them on these blank, you know, cardboard hero like cutout things. And then I printed them out and I cut them out and then I stuck them in my little bases. And that's what we used. Because then, hey, we know who that guy is. That's that superhero. We don't have to guess that, oh, the guy on the board, I know he looks like Superman, but that's not Superman. That's somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and my wife's actually suggested using Shrinky Dinks.
Shrinky Dinks?
Have you ever, do you know what shrink inks are?
I've heard them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. For those listening in the audience, why don't you give them an idea of what those are?
It's basically a sheet of plastic that you can actually either print onto or draw onto. So if you have an artist in the group, they could draw everybody's characters, and you put the plastic into the oven, and it shrinks down and condenses to, like, I think a third of its size. And so you want to sort of measure how big everything is and how small it's going to end up. But the plastic thickens up because it all shrinks down, and you could actually have completely unique figures of everybody, and they'd be plastic. They'd be a flat piece of plastic, but right. You'd at least have a representation there.
But you could still build some sort of base for it or something. So.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I don't know if you saw on my blog, I posted up that I built a paper miniature of this giant purple worm. It was actually from one monk. It was one of their free products. And that took me all afternoon, but the figure is pretty enormous. It stands up about six or 7 inches tall, and it's got a mouthful of teeth and everything. It's really cool.
Well, you see, there you go. Again, those things are very cool. They're not the one monk, by the way, people, is not the only one. I think Fat Dragon Games, they produce a whole bunch of scenery, and I think they do some miniatures as well. And also, I think World Work Games does as well.
Or do they there's a ton of them. If you just go to RPG Now and Google for paper minis, there's over 1,000 results.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, again, like I said, I kind of like the stuff that One Monks does, and they're not that expensive. I think his PDFs are like for one page $1. So that's not bad.
No, it's a phenomenal price, and that's actually a reduced price because I remember it used to be like $3-4 for a set. Now it's $1 for a set of figures.
So.
And the good thing is you can actually take, say you have a set, like I found on One Monk's forums, they have farm animals. So you could have a bunch of farm animals in the little town that you've got set up. Well, they only got one cow on the page. You can take that one cow and using any type of picture editing software, I've got Photoshop, so I use that. You could actually make an entire page of cows if you wanted to. So you have an entire field of cows for whatever reason you'd want. So that you can actually split it up a bit and make it so that you aren't using so much paper. If you want five cows, you don't have to print off five pages. You can print off one page.
You make a good point about inadvertently about, again, I think this goes back to the fact that, you know, you can create miniatures that there isn't a large need to do with them in metal, especially animals. Yeah. Animals are a big one, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know how? I don't think I've ever seen a cow metal miniature. Last time I checked, there might be. I
have seen some. Yeah.
You know, but well, I've seen a few here and there of various animals, but it's hard. I mean,
oh yeah.
You know, like for example, my wife, for some reason, she's a druid in her druid's animal companion is an orangutan. Guess what?
You're not going to find a picture of that.
Actually, there's only one company that manufactures an orangutan.
Yeah?
Yep. That is, give me a minute, Mega Minis.
Oh, yeah. Mega Minis has a ton of stuff.
Yeah, they make, you know, they make three different orangutans, and they're the only company I know that makes one. And that is, those figures are actually fairly new. So If, you know, a year ago, I wouldn't have been able to even find those. So,
yeah.
And so that's where I think, you know, I don't know if I'd want to mix and match paper and metal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that'd be a big issue, in my opinion. But, you know, I think the plastic and definitely the paper definitely fills a need in our gaming community. So,
yeah.
Well, I think with that, I think I'm going to close that out unless anyone has any other comments about. Is there any other alternatives that we haven't mentioned that we can think of?
Bottle caps, definitely a big time saver.
Bottle caps.
I had an old GM who used candy. So a large monster would be a Reese's peanut butter cup, and if you were the one to make the killing blow, you got to eat it.
Well, you could get sick that way.
Yeah, especially if you're fighting a bunch of minions and going through M&Ms.
I like that, though. You know, the green ones are the kobolds, the red ones are the, you know, lava monsters or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's I think that just about covers it for that. I think we've talked that one to death for now. Good news is that if you have any comments on anything we've actually said on this show, you can go ahead and either email us at info@rpgcircuits.com, leave us a voicemail message, and that's my favorite thing for you to do, because we will be more than happy to play those on the show and give you give them our rebuttals or whatever. So you can call us at 1-888-643-6322. That's 1-888-643-6322. That is a 1-800 number, basically. You don't have to pay for it. I absorb those costs. Give me a call. It'll send you straight to our voicemail. Leave us a voicemail message. We'll play it on the air. If you don't want to do that, you can call us on Skype at RPG Circus. And same thing. It will actually send you to voicemail. You can record that message. You can attach an email message with a voice comment that you created. No problem. You know, if you have an iPhone, there's, you know, you can use your little memo recorder on your iPhone to record a voicemail message and then email it to us. Whatever you want to do, because I will take all those formats, convert it to something I can use, and we'll be more than happy to play those on the air. Is there anything else? I think that about covers it for that. Do we have any closing comments from anybody?
Thanks for being on, Hannah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great talking to you guys.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and as new things pop up, keep us informed.
Will do.
So let's go ahead, and I think that calls it in for this episode. The preceding podcast is released under a Creative Commons 3.0 Attribution US license. For more information, go to creativecommons.org.